Today on The Independent, Pete and I preview Notre Dame's bowl destination as they are Sun Bowl bound against Oregon State. Plus, we look at potential hires on the horizon and look at a busy week in the transfer portal at Notre Dame. That and more tonight on The Independent.
Welcome to the latest episode of The Independent. I'm Pete Sampson, joined as always by my co-host, Matt Fortuna. He of The Inside Zone, me of The Athletic. And Matt, we're recording this on Sunday night after the bowl destinations. I think they just came out about 15 minutes ago, about like 10 p.m., I think, Eastern for Notre Dame. But they are going to the Sun Bowl after some good old-fashioned backroom haggling and arm-twisting. Notre Dame's name being drawn out of a hat. So it was a bit, I have to say, it was a bit of a shock to me because I thought that, you know, you're watching the games on Saturday thinking, all right, Florida State's, are they going to make it or are they not? Because Georgia just lost. That might take the ReliaQuest off the table, but at least we'll be able to see Marcus Freeman eat a Pop-Tart on the field. But no, that was taken away, at which point you're thinking, okay.
Mayo bath.
The mayo bath. But instead, we're going to settle for Marcus Freeman in cowboy boots. Hopefully, he can recreate the shot of Brian Kelly from 2010. My one and only time in El Paso, where I celebrated New Year's Eve at an Applebee's with our colleague Brian Hamilton and Ben Ford, if you remember him from Notre Dame beat from a long time ago. Oregon State with a sort of interim head coach who's not going to be coaching. It's a strange end to what turned into a strange season over the last 4.5 weeks, I have to say.
Yeah, Pete, this morning, or I should say this weekend, began with, all right, Notre Dame may not have a New Year's Six Bowl, but at least they're going to get Brian Kelly in a bowl game. To now, like at the 11th hour, we're finding out they're El Paso bound against Oregon State. And yeah, Trent Bray in his address to the team said he was not going to be coaching the team. I haven't seen like a hardcore update since then. That was about a week ago. Weird. Like, I look forward to like Pete and your colleagues' oral history of the how Notre Dame got to the Sun Bowl, because I actually think this is one that like I'm intrigued by, because I don't know how this came to be. It was not on any of our radars when we woke up this morning. When you saw the brief interview with the local El Paso TV station with the bowl director, you could tell it was an emotional, exciting day for him to land Notre Dame. And it was such a surprise they did not have a Notre Dame helmet to present when they made the announcement, which also looked like it was drawn out of a lottery. Like on that clip online, it was like, and coming up next, it is. And the answers from him probably added to the confusion, at least for me. But yeah, it was a very, very strange day in that regard, and in some ways capped a very strange week around the Notre Dame football program from where we left off. We spoke when, yes, we did. We did an episode after Chancey Stuckey got fired.
Yes.
But there had been a lot of movement since then. Probably some more movement very, very imminently on that front. But yeah, it's the offseason hasn't exactly gone according to plan. This was announced so late that there was not a bowl teleconference, which is like standard protocol. Like every coach in the country who's got a postseason game did a teleconference or Zoom conference today as part of a bowl thing. And the Sun Bowl, they didn't have the helmet for Notre Dame, so I guess they didn't have the coordination to get Marcus Freeman or anyone from there on Zoom. So we don't have their immediate reactions.
Maybe Oregon State's coaching.
Who's
coaching the team there? So yeah, it feels very haphazard at the end. I've never been a big fan of like the quote unquote meaningless bowl game tag or nothing to play for. But this one is pushing the boundaries of those things because of, Oregon State already has a ton of opt-outs. DJ Uiagalelei is not going to play in the game. I believe they had two offensive linemen who have opted out. Their 1,000-yard running back has been suspended for a DUI. Their head coach left for Michigan State. It feels like it may have the markings of Notre Dame against Miami in the Sun Bowl from 2010.
Al Golden.
Yeah, Miami had an interim head coach because Al Golden had not taken over the program yet. And you know, Notre Dame got out to a huge lead in that game and then sort of coasted. But it was a game that didn't really tell you a whole lot about where things were going with Notre Dame, because the next time out we saw them, I think, was South Florida, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
It had no bearing on what was to come at all. And this one may have even less because of opt-outs for Oregon State. And then, I mean, we haven't even got to Notre Dame opt-outs yet. I don't know how you would view this game if you're Audric Estime or Joe Alt and think, yes, I should play in that game as a business decision. I don't know when those decisions will get made. I just have a hard time seeing Notre Dame not having at least a few opt-outs in this game, or a couple opt-outs in this game, just based on the stature or lack thereof of the Sun Bowl against Oregon State.
Yeah, Pete, I want to see like what kind of staff Oregon State has together. Again, it's very weird. It's not weird that a new coach wouldn't coach his team in the bowl game. It is weird when that coach was promoted from within, right? Now, I know this isn't a New Year's Six game or the Fiesta Bowl game, but it'd be the equivalent of Marcus Freeman getting the job like he did 2 years ago and then saying, I'm not going to coach in the Fiesta Bowl against Oklahoma State because I'm going to recruit and do all this other stuff. Like, that doesn't really make sense to me. And maybe he will still coach. I haven't seen anything aside from the viral clip when he got announced as a head coach. A fun fact, I put this out there. Last time these two teams met was in the 2004 Insight Bowl, a game so memorable that I had to remind you about it, even though you covered it before you recorded. And the MVP of that game was a linebacker named Trent Bray, who happens to be the head coach of Oregon State now. And I would say, as a one-off, irrespective of these circumstances, this would have been a really good game. Like, Oregon State was a top 20 team this year. They were a team that was still eligible for the Pac-12 title game as recently as the last two games of the year. They lost a close one at home to Washington in the rain, and then they got blown out by Oregon last Friday in a game where, let's face it, their head coach had one foot out the door because he got announced as Michigan State's new head coach a few hours later the next morning. Oregon State was a really, really good team. I'd argue no Power 5 program. Football and beyond has done more with less than those guys. Unfortunately, those resources are going to be even smaller.
No longer Power Five.
They've got a scheduling agreement for next year with the Mountain West Conference. Them in Washington State, the Pac-2, if you will. But they were a really good team this year, and I would have loved to have seen them at full strength, Notre Dame at full strength, because I think that's a top 20 matchup. I mean, that's a game day worthy game, if it's in the regular season at either campus. Now, I mean, you mentioned all the opt-outs for Oregon State. I'm sure Notre Dame will have some, and that's irrespective of the players we already know for sure won't be there because they had a very active and busy week in the transfer portal. I mean, you tweeted earlier, they're down to four wide receivers, only two of whom have been full-time scholarship guys from day one, Jaden Thomas and Jaden Greathouse. It's a weird situation to be in. We're less than a week since Chancey Stuckey got fired as we record this, and this being the year 2023, this being the internet, we've heard all sorts of differing stories and rumors about why that came to be, none of which I really believe. Still very, very surprising on its own. But it does look like Mike Brown will be the next wide receivers coach for Notre Dame. He's at Wisconsin this year. He was at Cincinnati for about 4 years before that. He overlapped with Marcus Freeman there for two or three years. And a bit of a surprise move just in the sense of how quickly that came to be. Although in this cycle with the portal opening and with high school recruiting being what it is right now, it would have been hard to go long, especially at a position where you need numbers without a full-time head coach there.
Yeah. On that Bray point, their previous coach, Jonathan Smith, was the quarterback of the Fiesta Bowl team that blew out Notre Dame 41-9 back in the day. That was the Ocho Cinco, then known as Chad Johnson game, and TJ Houshmandzadeh. Oregon State does have a wide receiver with the last name Irish and a defensive lineman with the last name Golden. So all sorts of fun with names you can have in this one.
Did they opt out yet? If not.
No, I don't think so. But, I mean, on the Oregon State coaching staff, I mean, it's my understanding their running backs coach, their OC, their offensive line coach, their tight ends coach, and their defensive backs coach all went to Michigan State with Jonathan Smith. So it will be a bit of a ragtag bunch. More than it was for Marcus Freeman when Brian Kelly left, and you had to promote an analyst like Nick Lisinski to be special teams coach. That's happening at multiple positions for Oregon State in this game. So it's very much a team in transition. One of the reasons that I love the ReliaQuest Bowl, even if I was not a fan of the Brian Kelly narrative situation that may have arose there, was the fact that it did feel like a game that was going to let Notre Dame prove something, even in bowl season 2023, when it's hard to feel like you take anything away from a postseason game for next season. You know, whether if you beat LSU, if you beat Tennessee, there was a chance to, I guess, at least set yourself up for 8 months of good vibes if you're Notre Dame. It's just not there with this game. Like, if they win 35-10, like, I don't know how that doesn't really travel for me in a way that being an SEC opponent would.
Yeah, no, I'm completely with you. They did hire Ryan Gunderson as their offense coordinator, Oregon State. He's the quarterback's coach right now at UCLA, and he was a quarterback for Oregon State in that 2004 Insight Bowl. He didn't play, I don't think. Derek Anderson was a starter, but some more familiarity, if you will. Not exactly pleasant history if you're a Notre Dame fan.
Hey, even Notre Dame had an interim head coach in that game, Kent Bear.
And Brady, was that Brady Quinn's? He played. Was
sophomore
that
year. It was the end of his sophomore year. They had fired Tyrone Willingham. Kent Bear was the interim head coach, and Charlie Weiss had been hired. And I remember him doing a phone interview from Foxborough, because he was still the Patriots offensive coordinator on what amounted to a Super Bowl run. So yeah, this, when Oregon State and Notre Dame get together,
memories happen.
Or Notre Dame goes to the Sun Bowl, interim coaches are the place to be. So yeah, it was a long, strange trip to get to El Paso, which I think is fitting because that's what is required to get to El Paso. It's a hard place to get from here to there, as I'm finding right now as I'm looking for flights. But it just feels like it's too bad because, I mean, I've written this a few times, but like, we were both at the Ohio State game. If you remember, like, what it felt like when Rico Flores scored in the fourth quarter for Notre Dame to go ahead, like, this season felt like it had an overwhelming amount of possibility to it. And then it dwindled. And then even when they go to Clemson just a month ago, you are maybe not in control of making a New Year's Six game at that point, but have an inside track at one. And then you lose that one, and then you just completely fall off the map from a national point of view. It's like Notre Dame, I think, was the fourth most watched team in the country earlier in the year. And I think they're still in the top 10, but not by a lot. Just Notre Dame has had a very anonymous final month of the season, which is just, that's not a healthy thing for a place like Notre Dame. But this game is probably not going to change that a whole lot.
No, actually, it'll be on CBS, right? Isn't CBS usually the Sun Bowl one? So there
that
you
is
go.
That is the official network of the Sun Bowl. Yes.
There you go. So another, how many different networks will they have played on then to close the year, right? I mean, it's a lot, right? If you go be ABC, NBC, Pac-12, CBS,
Peacock.
Close the year.
Somehow they avoided the ACC network this year. It's a bit
crazy.
Shocking. Maybe that's why the ACC couldn't get them into the Pop-Tarts Bowl. They're like, you know, forget it. If you're not going to play on our network, it's the Sun Bowl for you.
Thanks for getting us, Stanford. I think the ACC's days may be a little bit numbered after today if we want to get serious about it. Not a good. And by the way, watching that Louisville team last night,
against
the Florida State team with a third-string quarterback, and I realize even in real time, we didn't think Louisville was as good as they played that night against Notre Dame. But my God, that's one of those ones that's going to become more and more perplexing the further and further we get away from it. As Jack Plummer showed his true football colors, I think last night against Florida State, just a strange event in a season full of strange events. You mentioned Notre Dame being watched in the fall, if you will. Colorado was more watched, and they had an even bigger fall. want to get technical.
That's true. They would love to go to the Sun Bowl.
They would love to go to the Sun Bowl. Deion Sanders and cowboy boots would be a match made in heaven. But they go into this game, and I don't want to harp on how poor the receiver play was all year because we know how poor it was. That being said, they go into this game. Let's see. That one, two, three. Without their at least their top three pass catchers from the season. Mitchell Evans hurt. Rico Flores Jr. in the portal. Chris Tyree in the portal. Audric Estime was number four. We'll see if he plays in the game or not.
Yeah, that was – I went through to just look at their final stats and then who's been removed either by portal or by injury. They will have lost 42% of their touchdowns, 52% of their receptions, and 61% of their receiving yards. I believe Audric Estime is tied for the team lead in receptions with 17 among the returning players, with Jaden Thomas, who's, you know, basically had his season end with a hamstring pull. I think a couple of side notes, KK Smith, who's a freshman who hasn't played all year, is supposed to be available for this game. I got some questions about Deion Colsey. I don't know if he will be available. His rehab from a knee injury looked very long based on watching him walk out of practice with a brace on just last month. But maybe that can help you on the margins or a little bit. But Notre Dame's receiver position, down Rico Flores, Tobias Merriweather, Chris Tyree. Braylon James is not going to be a factor in this game, but he at least could give you reps, and then obviously down your position coach as well. It's a difficult way for the Sam Hartman 1 year project to come to an end, because I think he in so many ways was just completely hamstrung by the receiver position and its lack of production or reliability, frankly, that you need that part of the puzzle. If you're going to invest in a quarterback and pay the NIL money to do it, you got to have them have somebody to throw to, and Notre Dame just never really did.
That looks like a situation that they will be in again, quarterback wise, next year. Nothing is official yet. I think we all expect Riley Leonard from Duke to be a commitment to Notre Dame in the near future. And they're starting, well, presumably they're starting quarterback for next year. That'll be an interesting one. He'll be an exciting one because I think, you know, a little bit like Sam Hartman, but even more direct. Now Irish fans are familiar with this guy. They saw what he's capable of. They saw him kind of will Duke to a near victory over Notre Dame way back in September. I'll be curious to see how else they manage a portal, if you will. Because, it's college football in 2023. People are going to leave. People are going to come. Did you see this mass exodus at receiver coming in light of this? Assuming it was in light of the Stuckey news. I don't know whether it was or not.
Yes. Flores was a bit of a surprise, but they have not lost one player yet that I'm like, oh, my gosh. I did not see that coming. Like, every player that has left has been expected, for me at least. Flores hurts because you felt like this is a guy who's kind of getting it a little bit. He's the only 100-yard receiver in the last 2 years for Notre Dame, and he just barely got over that against Wake Forest. It's not like you're losing Michael Floyd. You just don't have a lot of guys. And this is just a new world for Notre Dame that I don't know if Marcus Freeman and the staff have a handle on it yet, which is not necessarily a criticism because I don't know if anybody does. And I say that in the sense I was talking to a former Notre Dame assistant over the weekend, and his point was, look, if the transfer portal was around 15 years ago, Notre Dame never plays in the 2012 national championship game because Manti Te'o is not on that team. Stephon Tuitt is not on that team. Lewis Nix is not on that team. They all transferred. It's really hard. Like, it's hard at Notre Dame, but it's really hard your first year when you're coming from a non-profile school and you're getting your ass kicked in the classroom and on the football field. It's not a place that you naturally just be like, yep, I want to keep doing this for another 3 years. Back then, you sort of had to. You didn't have much of a choice. Now it's easy to walk away from it and say like, you know what, this isn't for me. On second thought, I'm going to do something else. But this is something Freeman's going to have to get figured out, because it's like you just can't have situations like Flores. And I know Merriweather struggled a lot, but receiver in particular, that's a developmental position here. What was Chase Claypool as freshman and sophomore year? Nothing. Miles Boykin, nothing. Will Fuller barely played as a freshman. Michael Floyd was the huge exception. Golden Tate barely played as a freshman, except for the Purdue game. So if receiver is going to be a portal-heavy position, which it seems like it's going to be, Notre Dame's going to have to figure out a way to get these guys to stick with it a little bit longer than 1 year. Because just at a place like this, it just takes a little bit longer. That doesn't mean freshmen can't play. Flores played a lot. He led the receivers in snaps. But you got to be able to sort of keep them engaged, keep them on the roster in a way that, you know, that position, they just haven't been able to do it.
One of the best parts of starting the Independent podcast was a chance to pick the brands we wanted to work with, and Rollback was at the top of my list. As the owner of multiple polos, hoodies, Q-zips, and shorts, I can tell you the quality, fit, and feel is unmatched. You've probably seen Rollback on Audric Estime, Kyle Hamilton, and Michael Mayer. Or maybe you saw the dozen Notre Dame fans wearing the Shamrock polo at the Central Michigan game last weekend. I can tell you I saw Rollback gear in Dublin earlier this year. While the gear hasn't made me quite that athletic as those Notre Dame football players, Rollback is my go-to on the golf course, heading to the lake, watching my kids' sports, or just walking the dog. So make sure you're comfortable throughout the season with Rollback. Use code IRISH for 20% off your first purchase. That's code IRISH for 20% off all hoodies, polos, Q-zips, and more.
Matt, what have you always said is my biggest weakness on fall Saturdays?
Well, Pete, I'd say your hair, but who am I to talk? Let's go with your wardrobe.
Harsh but fair.
ESQ outfits over 400 professional athletes, celebrities, and Irish players on game day, with bespoke clothing that elevates their game off the field. ESQ sculpts every garment with precision, helping you look your best for work, weddings, celebrations, or in your case, Pete, the press box.
Listeners of The Independent can get 15% off their first online order by using the code IND15 at checkout. That's IND15, or visit them at their Chicago showroom for a full custom look. Head to esqclothing.com to create your perfect fit.
Yeah, and I wonder, you know, to that earlier comment about, you know, if this portal existed 15 years ago, I would think Notre Dame, like everywhere else, would adapt to the times. I don't think you could put it in a nutshell of, well, school's hard, the portal's there, let's go. Like Brian Kelly, Charlie Weiss, whoever was in charge back then, like it would have been the normal, right? It wouldn't been like out of the ordinary. Like I think the same way Notre Dame adjusts now and doesn't have those freshmen. Like they don't have freshmen. They don't have a mass exodus of freshmen every year saying this stuff's too hard, I'm out of here. I think it would be, I think they would have adapted with the time, so to speak, the way they're trying to do right now. But it is a strange world. I mean, look, their opening day team next year is at Texas A&M. We could joke all we want about how poor they've been on the field for much of our lifetimes relative to their expectations, but they got a really good coach, Mike Elko. And, you know, what's that roster going to look like? Because that's a place that's portal heavy under normal times, gonna have to be portal heavy now when you have a new coaching regime. I'll be very, very curious to see the state of Texas A&M next year. I mean, look, we saw Elko make Duke formidable in year one, and we saw how bad Duke was, and Texas A&M was not good this year, but they were a tough out whenever you played them, because anytime you have a roster that had at least pieces of what was the greatest recruiting class in college football history, according to the metrics last year, you're going to have talent, and that's going to make you dangerous. And I know not a whole lot of that's going to be there next year, but Mike Elko is going to bring in his own guys. He's going to bring in his own staff. I think that will be this could be a very interesting game for both teams, obviously, in terms of, you know, brand and name recognition. Wouldn't surprise me at all if that was like, you know, the week one game day site or ABC primetime game. But, you know, much the same way, you know, Florida State got really good really quick under Mike Norvell and damn near beat Notre Dame in the opener a couple of years ago with a bunch of portal guys. I'll be very, very curious to see, you know, what that roster look, what both rosters look like, but what Texas A&M roster looks like, and, you know, how enlightening, for better or for worse, that could be for Notre Dame. Because I don't think Notre Dame's like that. I don't think they're that, like, far behind as far. Like, I think they've done a decent job relative to their history of, okay, this is college football this year. What are we going to do to get good at it?
I mean, I think they got
Sam Hartman, right? Like, that wasn't cheap.
I think their incoming has been very good. I think it's roster retention that is tricky. I mean, they signed their 2021 recruiting class. They signed 27 players. I think 7 remain going into their senior year. That's tough. If you want to be a developmental program.
It was tough. A coaching change, though. Like, you can't discount that either.
No, you can't discount that. But the reason that they promoted Freeman was that he wanted to sort of keep the culture the same. So it wasn't like a big change. But I mean, to your point on A&M and Notre Dame and how they look like, I think there'll be some competition for similar guys because Duke has a couple defensive linemen in the portal that I'm sure Notre Dame would like to recruit heavily. Like Aeneas Peebles is a really good player. He could play at A&M. He could play at Notre Dame. Probably a pretty good chance to be playing at one of them. You know, Will Shepard, the wide receiver from Vanderbilt, who's going in the portal, who I really like a lot. He's from Louisiana originally. He's a big sort of boundary receiver, could play at Notre Dame, probably could play at A&M, play at LSU. Like, it's and I do give Freeman and his staff quite a bit of credit for, I think their portal evaluations, while far from perfect last year, were quite good. You know, it's like Hartman was what he was.
Gotta take him though. I mean,
it's you gotta take him. Like, I'm just saying, like, he wasn't any more than what you thought. Like Javonte Jean-Baptiste was a lot more than what you thought. Thomas Harper, a lot more than what you thought. You know, Devin Ford, there really was an opportunity. Antonio Carter, not really opportunity. Spencer Schrader turned out to be good.
Yeah.
Yeah. you know, the big miss was Caleb Smith, which is probably a bad eval more than anything, because there are a ton of good receivers in the portal. Notre Dame took one that busted out almost immediately and quit the team in spring practice. So they, whatever they're doing in terms of scouting, I think has been pretty spot on, because that was a good hit rate last year, I think. But it's like, I say that, and it's like, it has to be a good hit rate. Like, because you can't take the sophomore, junior, senior transfer most times. So you've got to hit on a small pool of grad transfers when you have the opportunity. Last year they did that, but they're going to need to do that, I think, in perpetuity moving forward.
Yeah, they will. You know, assuming this receiver high school recruiting class stays intact, I'll be very curious to see what they do, because for as bad as the track record is, as far as having a successful or really impactful year as a freshman receiver at this program, there will be opportunities there for someone new and young to make plays. There just will be. Maybe they're capable of it, maybe they're not. But again, you play the math game right now, the numbers are what they are. I mean, there's how many this week? 4 receivers and a tight end entered the portal this week. I don't want to assume anything, but I would not bet money that Otter Castle May is back next year. Let me put it that way.
No.
there could be, I don't think there'll be any other movement in that regard, but again, that's, you said the numbers. I mean, it's your whole row. I mean, they're down to 4 healthy players at wide receiver right now. 2 of them began their careers as walk-ons. That's the situation they find themselves in entering this bowl game. Having 3 freshmen come in, we're all 4 stars. That's not going to fix it overnight. You need to go get reinforcements elsewhere as well. You need to make sure Mike Brown coaches up well. And again, I don't, this broke today. I mean, I don't know a whole lot about Mike Brown, other than the fact he worked with Marcus Freeman and he spent 1 year at Wisconsin. I mean,
I don't
heard anything.
No, I mean, I asked around a little bit at Cincinnati, just like a lot of good guy, good coach. I don't know if there's anything that's like eccentric that stands out about him. Sounds like maybe more of a worker than like a, like he's not really trying to get his name out there, I guess. You know, there are some coaches that sort of play the media game a little bit. Doesn't sound like he's really one of them. Just sort of puts his head down and goes to work. So that'll be interesting. But I think that, you know, with the Mike Brown intended hire, one of the reasons you got to do that quickly and not like, I realize Jamarcus Shepherd is from Indiana and at Washington, and you watch that offense, you're like, heck yeah, I want some of that like magic dust coming to South Bend to put in Jared Parker's playbook. You can't wait that long. I mean, they need receivers in the portal now. They need to secure their class before signing day now. Chris Mitchell, a grad transfer from Florida International, was up on a visit this weekend. His stat line last season, 64 catches, 1,118 yards and 7 touchdowns. I mean, that's like 3 players at Notre Dame. You know, that's the kind of production you need to give to Riley Leonard that you didn't to Sam Hartman. You know, I realized that Notre Dame had some injuries, but everyone has injuries. Everyone has 4-star players that don't turn out. So Notre Dame really needs to double down on that. You know, Chris Mitchell would be a big pickup. I mentioned Will Shepherd already. Juice Wells from South Carolina hopped in the portal officially today. Bo Collins from Clemson was a big-time recruit, looked at Notre Dame coming out of high school. There's guys out there that you can go get if you're Notre Dame. I think that would be a shrewd investment to put some funds to the side for some wide receivers, because it's like, if you're going to bring in somebody like Riley Leonard, like make sure that he's got some options to work with in a way that Sam Hartman just kind of never did.
Now, and Wake had one or two guys under the portal from the receiving core as well this year. I did get, again, I don't know a whole lot about Mike Brown other than that looks like he's going to be the next Notre Dame wide receivers coach. But when I put that out there tonight, I did get a text from a guy who coached him. Well, background, Mike Brown was a receiver at Liberty. He became a quarterback at Liberty. I believe he led them some conference titles, then played 3 years in the NFL at the Jaguars as a receiver. Text from someone who coached him. Mike played for me at Jacksonville, and he's become a great friend. He's awesome. Very happy for him. A great hire. He was super smart when he was a player in the room. He's a great coach in person. One of my close friends in the profession, yada, yada, yada. But the person who sent me that was someone who would have been interested in a job at Notre Dame. And for him to go out of his way and say, look, they got the right guy here, I thought was pretty telling, especially it being unsolicited. So, again, I don't know a whole lot about the guy other than what I've learned over the last couple hours today. And if you're a Notre Dame fan, you know it's been a – I don't know if I call it a busy day. It's been a long day.
Yes.
Short on answers.
It's been a long week. Stanford feels like a long time ago at this point, but,
And
look, I get it. There's the tenor around the Notre Dame fan base right now is like very leery of everything, but like Mike Brown is more than qualified for this job. I mean, he was at Cincinnati for 4 seasons. Freeman knows what kind of worker he is. Gino Guiducci knows what kind of worker he is. Alec Pierce would be like the big resume line that he had there. He had 2 other receivers that turned into NFL draft picks off those Cincinnati teams. So it's like he gets it from a working point of view. And I've said this before and written this before. I realize there's some like, I guess reluctance to just be like, Coach X hires friend from school Y. Like that's how people get jobs in every walk of life. And it works out most of the time. Also, Freeman has looked outside his coaching tree before. Al Golden was one of those hires. That worked out too. Chancey Stuckey did not work out, apparently.
Yeah, I didn't mean it like negative. I'm just using it as an example.
But you know, Dylan McCullough.
Right.
You know, Joe Rudolph, he knew from Ohio State, but like that was 15 years ago. So it's not just a default setting. Who did I work with at Cincinnati? Let's hire him. Brian Mason. that one worked out okay. They worked together at Cincinnati. If you watch,
and so did Marty Biagi this year. I mean, they didn't block a number of punts, but special teams, especially toward the end of the year, got much good better.
Things. So I don't, you know, Mike Mickens, he would have hired in a heartbeat, but he Notre Dame had already hired him when Freeman got here, and that's worked out quite nicely. So the familiarity part, I don't think should be any kind of a red flag at all. You know, in many ways, it's a positive more than a negative. I understand like the sentiment towards Jared Parker is where it is right now, but
well, that's where this is.
Yeah, that from. Like has kind of colors everything else. But like with Mike Brown, if you just said like, "Hey, here's three NFL receivers this guy coached. He's worked in the Big Ten. He played in the pros. Younger guy," you'd be like, "All right, we can do that."
That's the big. I mean, playing in the NFL. And actually playing, like, I mean, he wasn't a star, but he played for 3 years. That goes a long way. It just does.
Yeah. So that, and it's like, look, it's, we're not talking about a coordinator hire. We're talking about a position coach hire. That's not the same thing. Like a coordinator hire can be met with, I think, a different level of scrutiny because the importance of a coordinator hire is at a much higher level and determines the fate or the success or failure of a head coach in a lot of instances. A position coach rarely has that kind of an impact. It's, you know, recruiting in a development position. Mike Brown should be in position to do both of those things quite well. So it seems fine. I don't want to skip ahead unless you've got something else, but I was curious as we're recording this on Sunday night. I don't think there could be a college football podcast that doesn't address the Final Four. Thumbs up, thumbs down, like huge problem, Michigan, Washington, Texas, Alabama, or no?
I wrote this today, and I would say two things can be true. This might be the most excited I've been for a 14 field. I mean, all you need to know is if you saw our friend Adam Redberg tweeted the live reaction of Michigan finding out they're playing Alabama.
Oh, yeah, that was great.
And that's a 1-4 matchup, and you could feel and hear the gulp. Which tells you, like, yeah, all four teams can win this thing. I mean, I was in Vegas all weekend, never counting Washington out again. They win every big game they're in. Like, they can win this thing. Texas has looked elite. So I'm very, very excited from a football standpoint about these four games. That said, my heart absolutely breaks for Florida State. I mean, to see Jordan Travis tweet, basically apologizing for getting hurt, and then saying, "I wish I got hurt earlier in the year." It sucks. I mean, I don't know what else to say. They schedule the ACC is what it is. They schedule two non-conference SEC games away from home. I mean, Jaden Daniels is going to win the Heisman. If he didn't win the Heisman, it'd be because of his performance against Florida State. Mm-hmm. I don't know what more you can do. This was a program. I know they're blue blood, but like, again, they were nothing when Mike Norvell got there. Absolutely nothing. And I just feel really bad, especially since they won all the games. Like, we're not comparing one loss resumes here. We're comparing undefeateds against one loss resumes. So again, I feel really, really bad for them. I also wrote this, they do get Georgia. They're probably a 2-touchdown underdog in that. If you want to play the whole eye test Vegas game, I think most people would still say Alabama and Georgia are going to be favored over most people, and Michigan. They're 1-point favorite over Alabama right now. Florida State beats Georgia with a backup quarterback in the Orange Bowl. And they finished the season undefeated. We've seen other teams with Florida self-declare themselves national champions. I think if Michigan wins the playoff this year, it'll be ironic because Michigan still has not won a undisputed non-shared national championship for way too long. So history has a way of repeating itself. Co-champions, Florida State and Michigan. But again, if Florida State were to beat a Georgia team they're such big underdogs against, I do think that would be like one more prove it FU. See, screw the point spreads. Like, this is a team of heart and defense, and that can make adjustments. Like, all the things football coaches preach, these guys embodied. And it, I'm not here to tell you that they're going to win, would have won any more games. Again, these games are going to be a lot more exciting without them, frankly. But I just feel really, really bad for them because, like, what more can you do?
Yeah, it just sucks for them. It just sucks. I could have skipped without the, some of our colleagues in the media moralizing about like how it is devaluing the regular season or like, why do you even play the games? like, do the games even matter? Yeah, the games matter because Jordan Travis got hurt in one. Like, that's part of football. It's unfortunate, but that's part of the game.
And I would add to that, like, so often, and maybe this is a bad example because we're talking about Florida State. For as much as we talk about strength of schedule, the first thing we all do and the first thing the committee does is look at that loss column. And in this case, Texas, Alabama had the balls to schedule each other in non-conference, and they both got it. Like, I'm happy for that. Like, I'm happy they were not penalized for not taking the Georgia or Michigan route of playing absolutely nobody.
Right. Yeah. I think the thing I was happiest about was that Georgia did not make it and was not even considered to make it, because as soon as they lost to Alabama, you're like, you beat nobody and played nobody. And like, sorry that your Oklahoma series got canceled because Oklahoma's joining your conference. Your conference sort of did that to you. So I didn't feel bad about that at all. I feel terrible for Florida State. I'm with you. Like, if college football is a TV show, which really it is, this is a great TV show.
All SEC and Big Ten as of next year.
On January 1, this is a great friggin' TV show. I'm looking forward to the moralizing about Florida State, kind of cycling through college football speak in the next day or so, because I feel bad for Florida State, but I don't feel that bad. I don't feel like I need to write a 2,000-word column bad about Florida State. Like, it stinks. Somebody was going to get left out. Stinks.
This is
there were five playoff-worthy teams. Guess what? There's only four playoff spots. Next year, this will all change. So, like, and that's like, that was one of the things that really ticked me off on Saturday night when I saw some tweets from the Alabama AD about, like, if we get left out, why would we ever schedule Texas again? Like, the entire system changes next year. Like, none of this matters. Like, there no precedents were set today by excluding Florida State or including Alabama. Zero. Not one precedent was set. So let's just, like, sort of get over ourselves for a minute. Like, college football can take itself a little too seriously sometimes, and that was on display today or something.
Yeah, I mean, history is a way of repeating itself. 2011, Alabama gets in to face LSU in a rematch over Oklahoma State, and a lot of people are upset about that. And the reality of the situation is, at that time, the BCS system, Big 12 Commissioner Dan Beebe, whatever, I don't know how you pronounce it anymore, he was among the staunchest defenders of the BCS. Same way Jim Phillips, the ACC commissioner, was part of the alliance that absolutely held up the 12-team playoff from being implemented this year and not next year. And all SEC BCS title game indirectly led to a 14 playoff. I'm not saying this is leading to next year because it was already on the books, but, like, it's not a problem we'll have to deal with again. It's a problem we probably could have fixed earlier. This goes directly back to the lack of leadership in college football. I mean, when they announced the playoff, I remember Brian Kelly coming out that first year saying, why don't we make it eight teams? That's what we do. Or, you know, I'm used to tournament football from my Division II days. And there are a lot of people who said that. And then I'll never forget this year and the first year, the only 2 years where it's like, okay, like, teams got left out that could absolutely win the national championship.
Can you refresh my memory? Like, Ohio State made it and won it with Cardale Jones. Who got screwed that year?
TCU and Baylor both had
one. Oh, they flipped at the very end. Okay, got it. Yeah.
Ohio State was 6. They beat Wisconsin 50. They were underdogs in that game. I remember covering that game. 59-0 in Cardale Jones' first start, and they kind of left no doubt about it. But that TCU team in particular, I thought Trevon Boykin, I think, was their quarterback. I just remember thinking this team could win the championship. Obviously, they didn't get that chance. But after that year, I feel like there was talk of, like, yeah, you know, we really underestimated the fact that, you know, there are five conferences in four spots, as if, like, this is a math problem that just came out of thin air. And honestly, they were very lucky that outside of that year and outside of this year, the thing kind of solved itself.
It really did. Like,
there were very, very few arguments.
You are way more often to find, like, couldn't we just go back to the BCS
last year
discourse than, oh, we need to expand the playoffs discourse.
Last year, TCU loses the conference title game. Ohio State doesn't even play in the conference title game because they got smoked at home by Michigan, and they both still made it.
Yeah.
And again, every year is different, right? 9 out of 9 years, Florida State would have made it. This is the 1 year they wouldn't have. Similar
every season is its own
like Georgia would have made arc. This was Georgia 2 years ago, the year they won it.
Yeah,
they were undefeated. They lost Alabama in the title game, in the SEC title game. They got back in. It is what it is.
I mean, imagine Notre Dame going 12-0 this year. Like, would they have made it?
Probably. I mean, did that schedule hold up?
I mean, Louisville would not be as good because they would have, like, Clemson, whatever. Like, Ohio State would still be a nice win, though.
Right.
But that would be really their only good.
It's a good question. I not ponder that, but that's a good question because, yeah. I mean,
at first I was like, well, of course, at 12-0, they would make it for sure. But the more I thought about it, I'm like, well, I mean, they'd have to displace Alabama, which just beat Georgia. I don't know if they would have.
And scheduled the best Texas team in the last 15 years.
I don't know if Notre Dame would Notre Dame even have been ahead of a Florida State? I don't know.
They wouldn't have the conference title to show for it, which that's like one of the few subjective marks that matters. That's a good question. I hadn't thought of it in that context, but I mean, it's they're. I feel bad for Florida State. It's a weird system. That said, I'm excited for the games. And I think Washington should be one on resume.
Yeah, that'd be a pretty easy argument to make. I think
they have more ranked wins over Michigan. They actually challenged themselves non-conference. I mean, Michigan State wasn't good, but they traveled on the road to a Power Five opponent. And Boise State just won the Mountain West, and they beat those guys by 39. I think Washington can't bet against Kalen DeBoer, especially after Friday night. I mean, that guy's impressive. But in a Machiavellian way, you see Michigan get Alabama.
They're probably happier say, okay. to avoid.
Kind of worked out. Alabama. They get Sark, their old coach.
Yeah. It will be it's going to be a great semifinals. And it is one of the few fringe projects byproducts of going to El Paso that are good. I will be home to watch it, opposed to covering the ReliaQuest Bowl against Tennessee or LSU. So that it will make taking this all in a little bit easier for everybody. So, I don't. On that note, I think I'm not sure when we will have access at Notre Dame again.
Some bowl, get on it.
Yeah, I assume they would do something this week. But it's been a weird last 7 days around here. So I wouldn't bet on anything at this point. But Matt and I will be back in all sorts of bowl lead up stuff. Whenever Riley Leonard happens, we can do an emergency podcast at that point. Seems reasonable. So that may be in the next week or so. But the Independent will be here to guide you through with all your Sun Bowl coverage needs as I figure out how I'm going to get there to cover it. And
can you imagine if we did a live show today, like bowl announcement, and then we're just talking for like 5 hours? NC State's going to
I flipped on the bowl coverage show at noon, and I was like, okay, at 12:45, I got to leave to drive a half hour to coach two youth basketball games and then drive a half hour back. I got home at 5, still nothing. And then I don't think it came out to like 6. I mean, it was
late because I'm in California right now. I was in Vegas over the weekend. I'm going back next week. I squeeze a trip in to visit my mother, and we went out to an early dinner. But being on West Coast time, it doesn't feel as bad. But I'm just like, all right, yeah, we'll go to bed. Hold on. Yeah. No, I just need to wait for this bowl announcement that was supposed to happen. And all of them were like that. I think the Holiday Bowl had a time they said they're going to announce their game, and it went hours past it.
Why are bulls fading into the sunset, Matt? Because they're not run professionally at all. It's some very good people, but man, when it comes to the bull selection process, it is a hot mess.
Did of all the fancy jackets and spilled chili, sorry, by the Pop-Tarts guy, that we saw at Notre Dame games this year, have you ever noticed a single person from the summer?
No. Because if they were there, they probably would have grabbed a helmet on the way out.
On that note,
they didn't have for the announcement. So, all right, we'll leave it there. Matt and I will be back with future episodes of The Independent all month as Notre Dame gets ready for the Sun Bowl and the transfer portal opens. So until then, he's Matt. I'm Pete. Thanks for being with us on the latest episode of The Independent.